Welcome to the Human Centered Leadership Podcast with me, your host, Colm Hay. I have worked in the leadership space for 3 decades, and now I work with organizations and leaders to develop powerful cultures of high value and performance that is built all around their people. We will interview leaders from around the world and at the very top end of their game to explore what emotional intelligence in practice actually looks like and the benefits that it could bring to any team. This is a movement to transform the way that we see leadership and to create powerful cultures where people feel seen, heard, valued and appreciated, and consequently perform to the very best. Why don't you join the movement and subscribe to our podcast? And don't forget to click on notifications to stay up to date with all new content. Hello and welcome to another episode of this incredible program. I really enjoy some of the conversations that we have on here around leadership, what it means to have true emotional intelligence in leadership, why that is so powerful and so important for organizations. And today you've got me. It is unfortunately just me, because every now and then I just get this urge to have some ramblings. Now, it could be a result of, you know, number of conversations that I might have had with all sorts of people, or it could be an accumulation of my thoughts and ramblings as I, you know, traverse through the day and the weeks and the months. But also, it's also a good opportunity, isn't it, don't you think, to just put foot on the ball. Now, we've had some great conversations on this program with all sorts of incredible leaders, you know, people at the forefront of their industries, people with vast amounts of experience. And hey, we've got a whole load more lined up. I went to a speaking event where I was speaking last week to a group of very senior HR people from a whole wide range of industries, from security through to banking, from people who were specializing in data analysis around the people aspect, through to people who are really focused in on performance. And here's the one thing. I don't know whether I'm just attracting these kind of people to me, but what I'm hearing from these people really do challenge some of the conversations that I've had with leaders in the past. So in the past, my conversations around leadership, specifically around my style of emotional intelligence and why I believe it's so very important to be human-centric as leaders, to get the very best out of our people and to drive sustained, improved performances. Often the reaction that I've had is that it's either a bit woo-woo, or that it's a bit woolly, it's not really focused, or that it just doesn't drive the bottom line. It is a secondary skill. It is a nice to have, and it is something that we should aspire towards, but not necessarily put at the forefront of our thinking, because it's far more important to work towards metrics, right? Those key performance indicators, those performance metrics that we often measure our organizations and businesses with. And to some degree, that's true. But I think we're looking at this from the wrong end of the telescope. What we'd fail to understand is to get to the metrics, to achieve the metrics, the performance metrics, the profit margins, the KPIs that we're aspiring towards, to get to there, we're very reliant, aren't we, on the people in our organization. And just bear with me on this, and I say this an awful lot, by the way, to CEOs and heads of HR that I'm often talking to when I'm talking about the services that we provide around culture transformation and around leadership development and around team building. If we get our people feeling at their best, if we get people working in an environment or feeling that they're working in an environment where they feel valued, seen, heard, and appreciated, then they are more likely to work to a higher level than if they felt that they were excluded, that they were ignored, that they were invisible, that they would be micromanaged in an organization. Don't you think? So when CEOs or heads of HR or COOs say to me, hey, Cole, okay, so you're saying that you're going to do this for our organization. You're going to help us develop our leadership skills. You're going to help us to transform the culture so it's much more people-centric. But how does that affect our bottom line? And it's as simple as this. A happy workforce will work harder than an unhappy workforce. Happy people are much more likely to excel than unhappy people. And there's loads of science behind this. And you don't really need the science. I mean, this is a very simplistic issue. So for me, this is why human-centric leadership is so important. And here's the thing. All these people that I now speak to, maybe they gravitate towards me, or maybe I gravitate towards them. I have no idea. But all these people I speak to, particularly people who are specifically involved in performance or specifically involved in things like data analysis, all of that stuff that I used to think, oh, goodness, these people are going to be very single-minded around following, chasing and following KPIs and performance metrics. The people I'm talking to in those fields are actually telling me data isn't everything. And actually what we need to be looking at is how do we get better performance from our people? What does that mean to want to get better for performance from our people? What environment do we need to create where people can truly excel on behalf of the organization? And flipping the script a bit, really, to understand we've got to make people feel better. You see, the Human-Centered Leadership Conference that we're running in May, and by the way, if you have not got your ticket for the Human-Centered Leadership Conference, I absolutely urge you to do that, because this is going to be a phenomenal conversation. We're going to have some industry leaders who get it, who have been there, who have practiced this style of leadership and understand it, whether it's from the head of the Army Leadership Center or somebody who's been a chief people officer globally for a major car manufacturer who's worked across four or five continents at a time, who understand the challenges of intercultural connection, or whether it's HR leaders who try to bring the human back into HR. All of these people get it. And we will be having conversations around how has the world changed? How has the world reshaped itself after COVID-19? See, I think that was a pivotal year. I know it was a pivotal year for so many of us in so many ways. But there was a significant thing that happened in COVID-19 that shaped, I think, workplace cultures and workplace environments going forward. Just reflect back to how you felt in 2020. I remember how I felt in 2020, and I'm a pretty positive kind of guy. You know, I've always been told I'm a pretty positive kind of person. But when you are faced every single day with this almost post-apocalyptic kind of messaging of fear, death and destruction, then of course it's going to impact upon your thinking. And many of us started living in fear. Many of us started to reevaluate our choices and our lives, and particularly our work. I mean, we spend like a third of our lives at work, would you say, something like that? You know, certainly a third of your day every day is spent at work. So it's an important part of our lives, right? And so many of us, I think, started thinking, well, is this it? You know, all of these years I've been working in this organization, or I've been working in this business, or I've been working in this team. Is this it? Is this my lot? And I think that a lot of people came away from that thinking, no, I no longer want to work in an environment where I'm, you know, not 100% happy, where I don't feel, where I feel invisible or not heard or not listened to, where I feel that I'm not catered for, or the people aren't interested in me. And I think what happened is a lot of people started reevaluating what it is that they wanted. So consequently, people made choices. People made choices to say, hey, we only live once. We are so close to death here. We're hearing messages around death every single day. Well, I want to live a life that's worth living. I want to live a life that I think that is the most fulfilled life that I can. And the same in the workplace. So I want to go work in an organization where I at least feel that I'm being valued. Better still, I want to work in an organization where I feel that I'm included. And that's such an important part. And I know we talk about DEI, and you know my views on DEI. I think we've got diversity, equity, and inclusion so wrong, and we've got it so wrong for so many decades that we've lost sight of what it is. It's a very simplistic concept for me. Everybody is different. Every single person is different. Every single person thinks differently, and we need to create environments where people feel included, that their voice matters, their thoughts matter, their ideas matter, they matter. They are seen, heard, valued, and appreciated. So very important, right? So I think what happened was when people started thinking like that, they made choices. They made choices to leave their organization, leave their team. We had things like the Great Resignation, where we had unprecedented movement of talent from organizations. Many organizations were experiencing massive talent leakage, and some organizations were struggling to recruit new talent, good talent, into their organizations because they were fishing in the same fish pond as so many other organizations of a similar ilk. And consequently, great talent was getting snapped up very, very quickly. And for those who didn't have the courage or the wherewithal or the opportunity maybe to leave their organization, and they were stuck where they were, they decided that they weren't, why should I bleed for this organization? Why should I work like a Trojan for this organization when I'm not being valued? So what I'll do, I will do what is required of me. I'll do the bare minimum, but nowhere beyond that. I won't work past, let's say, 5 p.m. I will work to the dot, and then after that, I won't pick up my work laptop, my work mobile again until the next morning, because I'm not getting paid for it and I'm not being valued. So why would I do that? I've got no incentive to do that whatsoever. So that's the term quiet quitting came from. And then, of course, we move from that into massive and unprecedented industrial action, certainly here in the United Kingdom, unprecedented industrial action. I mean, we were getting people like the consultants in hospitals going on strike. And I heard yesterday from a dentist friend of mine that consultants in the UK have been offered a pay rise of 20-something percent, which is significant. The junior doctors have been given something like 5, 6, 7, 8%, something like that, which sounds significant. But when you realize that they've not been getting pay rises for at least 8, 9, 10 years, where inflation has gone up, essentially, that's just not enough. And we think that it's all about the money, but I think it's way beyond that. And there's, again, lots of research and studies done over the years, over the decades, that demonstrate that people are not consistently motivated by money. They are motivated by far more than that. I mean, we are social beings. And as social beings, we want to feel included in something, right? So this is where my concept of inclusion comes from. When I talk about DEI, I want to break it down into such simplistic understanding that it becomes such an obvious thing for organizations to aspire towards. We are social animals. We all want to feel included. Maslow's hierarchy of needs tells us that we want to feel a part of something. Well, if you're excluding your employees, if you're excluding parts of your organization, then you're not achieving that. There's a significant part of your organization, therefore, that is not feeling excluded, not feeling included. And if they're not feeling included, then do you really think they are going to be working tirelessly towards your KPIs, towards your performance metrics? I would suggest not. So these are the kind of conversations we've been having over the last couple of years, certainly on Human-Centered Leadership podcast and the Unlocking Leadership program that we have. But also, this is the kind of conversations I've been having with lots of people over the last several months. I found myself thinking, what could I make this program about? This episode, this specific episode. And the one thing that jumped out to me was leadership legacy. What it means to leave a leadership legacy. What it means, what do we need to do to create the right legacy? Understanding the impact and the power that we have as leaders and the influence that we have as leaders. And then how can we make the very best of that position and that time that we have available? About 2 weeks ago, I was approached by someone who said, hey, you might not remember me, but you were my boss 15, 20 years ago. You were my boss 15 to 20 years ago, and I still remember how you made me feel then. I remember that you used to say to me, always be conscious of the words that come out of your mouth, because the words that come out of your mouth may have different impacts for different people. Now, as you know, I was a senior police officer in the police service for the best part of 20 years. I was actually in the police service for 32 years, but in leadership positions for two-thirds of that. And I know that police officers deal with people, and the more, the higher you go in the levels, obviously, as leaders, we deal with internal people as well, our staff. It's no different for me. And I've always held true to this philosophy that we should be conscious as leaders of the stuff that comes out of our mouth, because that will have different impacts. For us, it might be a routine conversation, but one or two words used poorly can actually have an adverse impact on somebody who might be listening in on that conversation. And the example I've always used is, you know, that if we were to say something that somebody heard, a member of our team heard, and it impacted on them adversely, they are going to take that away. They're going to infect their families with it, either through not talking about it, being very moody and having a, you know, this sullen atmosphere in their family, or talking about it and creating this sense of fear, anger, frustration in their families. And they're not going to stop them. They're not just going to stop at their families. They're going to tell their best friends. They're going to tell their colleagues. And that ripple effect continues to grow. So this episode is all about, let's understand what leadership legacy is. And by the way, in my conversation with this person who used to be on my team, they've done really well. They've got promoted to the rank that I was at when I left, which I'm really proud of. I'm always proud when somebody that I worked with has achieved some great things. So they are now senior leaders. And they said to me, I remember what you used to say to us about, you know, being conscious of what comes out of our mouths. And they said, I still practice that today. I still practice that today because I understand the importance. I remember how you made me feel, and you made me feel good. You made me feel supported. You made me feel a part of something special. And I want my staff to feel exactly that. So thank you so much for that lesson. And I thought, you know, it fills your heart to hear this kind of stuff. So that for me is an example of leadership legacy. So let's understand leadership legacy. What is it? Leadership legacy, when we talk about it, well, let's just break it down into the word legacy. What is a legacy? A legacy for me is what we leave behind in our trail when we move forward. So what is it to leave a lasting impact, for example? This lasting impact where 15, 20 years later, you still remember what was said to you. I mean, I still remember what some very wise leaders in my life, there was a chap 30 years ago when I first became a leader, I remember this one senior officer taking me to one side, and he said to me, he says, Cole, he says, you're full of enthusiasm. He says, I love your passion, your energy and your enthusiasm. I mean, I was a young guy then. And he said, but there's one thing that I want you to remember throughout your entire life. As you are moving forward as a leader, always check in your rearview mirror that you've still got people behind you following you. He said, because the danger is when you are so energized as you are, you get carried away with it and you go to 100 miles an hour, but other people can't keep up with the pace that you might be at. So you're going to leave people falling behind in your wake. And when you finally get to your destination, you might only have a fraction of the people following you. I mean, these are really wise words. And that's what I call now, I call that pace-setting leadership, where you have that gung-ho mentality. You say, come on, up and at them, and you run forward. And it's actually quite a dissonant style of leadership. It's either pushing people towards something or pushing people towards you. So that's a very dissonant style of leadership. So in order for you to have that kind of leadership, your language would be a very telling kind of language as opposed to a very asking kind of language. So that was an important lesson that I learned. That there is an example of leadership legacy. It's had a lasting impact. Here I am at the age of 58, still talking about something that I was taught at the age of something like 25, 26. Incredible, isn't it? But we're all doing that. We're all doing that. Whether we're doing that as parents, whether we are doing that as leaders, whether we're doing that as friends or siblings or whatever it might be, we are constantly leaving in our wake a legacy that other people will remember for a long, long time, if not forever. And it goes way beyond the accomplishments that we might have achieved. You know, people won't remember you for the things that's necessarily that you achieved, or for the money that you had, or the position that you held. People will remember you, as Maya Angelou once said, for how you made them feel. And I've seen this to be one of the truest statements ever. And in order for us to do that, in order for us to leave a lasting leadership legacy, that's a positive leadership legacy, we really need to understand our core values. Now, I talk about core values all the time. I have core values. I encourage every person to have core values. So when I work with any kind of leadership team, from executive boards through to, you know, junior leadership teams, one of the first questions I ask them is, what are your values? And sometimes I'll point to some pretty poster on the wall and say, hey, they're my values. And I'll say, no, they're the organization's values. Yes, of course, you need to understand them. You need to align to them. But you also need to understand what your values are. So we take them through a values exercise to get them to understand their five core values. Now, my overriding value is a four-letter word called Siva. It's an ancient Indian word, and the word Seva, S-E-V-A, basically means selfless service. So one of my core values, my number one value, if I had a priority order to my values, my number one value is this concept of Seva. That's what's driven me in everything that I've ever done. It's driven me in my work as being a police officer. You know, I was serving the public. It's driven me in my work as a leader. I was serving the people that I was leading. Can you see the subtlety beyond that? Because there are some leaders who get promoted to a certain level and they think of the power. They become addicted to the power and the ego gets involved and they are very much driven by that. Whereas other leaders will see it as a position of responsibility and service as opposed to a position of authority. And now, here I am, you know, 10 years out of the police service, and I'm still serving. All of our clients need serving. I have to make sure that we are serving them to our absolute best. And that's why we go to the nth degree for our clients, because we are driven by this number one priority, number one value of Siva. So reflecting on these personal values really does guide our leadership decisions, because it's our values that influence and guide our decisions on a day-to-day basis. Whether we know our values or not matters not. It's understanding that our values sit behind all our decisions. So if we understand our values to a real depth, then we'll understand why we make some of the leadership decisions that we make. And it's also important that we make sure that the actions that we take align with the values. I mean, how often have you taken action or done something that's made you feel uncomfortable? It's probably because it's not aligned with your values. How many times have you tried to be somebody that you're not, or pretend or act in a way that's uncomfortable for you, or make a decision? I mean, when you get into an organization, and I've seen this and I've been there and I've done it myself, where you feel you have to assimilate to a culture that exists, you know, it could be a performance-driven culture, it could be a machoistic culture, it could be a culture where, you know, strong language, strong words, strong behavior is what the norm of that organization is. I remember I was behaving like that at a point in time in the police service, and I felt really uncomfortable. I realized this, I was fighting against my own values. So, you know, I realized that I needed to be me. I needed to be comfortable in my own skin. So identifying, understanding, and working in accordance with your core values to drive leadership legacy is critical. The next thing is about finding the right kind of mentors. Well, there's two things. One is around finding the right kind of mentors. And secondly, is about making sure that you're leaving the right kind of successes on your conveyor belt. Now, these are two very big points. So for me, when I was looking for mentors, I didn't look for the person that was like flying up through the promotions and, you know, getting promoted every other year and, you know, excelling. And that's, I was looking for the one who I believed was like wise, was value driven, had depth to them. And these are people I sought out, and I got so much value from that. I mean, I mentor a lot of leaders now, but the people that come to me tend to be similar to me. They tend to have similar values and align with my values. So it's a pleasure mentoring and coaching these kind of leaders. There was a time when I just said, I have not the time to coach any leaders anymore. But then I felt that I was missing coaching, because there is something quite intimate in coaching, right? So now when I coach leaders, I make sure that they are qualified and they are similar to me in terms of values, because it just, the conversations are just that bit easier. But also when you are looking to create successes, make sure that you are creating those successes based upon values. This is not just about this systematic promotion of leaders. You want to create leaders behind you on that conveyor belt that are even better than you, are even more valued than you, even more comprehensive and deep than you. And I'm so pleased to say that I have bumped into so many people that I used to work with, that I led, who have gone on to maybe even go beyond the position that I achieved in the police service. Or I've worked with clients now who have gone on to become incredible directors, professors, whatever they have done. But they have all got on this conveyor belt that I have created. And I am so proud of these brand new value-driven leaders that we've unleashed into the world. So succession, creating successes behind you on this conveyor belt of life is so very important. And remember that this impact that we leave when it comes to legacy goes way beyond the bottom line. The bottom line being profit margins, KPIs, and all the metrics that we've talked about. When we talk about leadership legacy, it's about understanding its significance in social responsibility and ethics. Great leadership is ethical leadership. Great leadership is value-driven leadership. Great leadership is about making the right decisions for the right reasons in the right way. And sometimes that kind of language is lost when we start talking about metrics and performance margins and profit margins and so forth and so on. So leaving a positive legacy contributes to both society and the environment. The environment being, you know, the organization maybe, or the team, or the department, or the stakeholders that you might have been in contact with, and the greater society, because that ripple effect that I talked about with adverse feedback, there's a similar ripple effect when it comes to positive, isn't there? There's a similar ripple effect. I mean, I always said when I left the police service, I want to do something where I keep dropping pebbles in the water, and they create these ripple effects so that everybody else is affected by this style of leadership, this style of thinking, this human-centric, value-driven approach to leadership. And that's what I do. That's the mission that drives me forward. So understand that there's a much bigger impact beyond the bottom line. And I think if you have a limited mindset as a leader, you will only ever think about the bottom line. If you have an infinite mindset, as Simon Sinek talks about, then you will have this understanding that our leadership style actually goes way, 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 way beyond the metrics that we often talk about. And finally, the point I want to make around leadership legacy and making sure that we've got our leadership legacy right and it's thought through and it's the right legacy is really about this ability to reflect and adapt. Reflection in terms of the value of self-awareness and continuous learning. You know, Simon Sinek talks about the growth mindset and the infinite mind. And I, you know, it's something I practice every single day. It's something called the compound effect. You know, you learn something every single day. By the end of the year, even if it's a tiny little thing, by the end of the year, you've learned an awful lot, right? And you're constantly growing forward. I always say that if you stop growing, then essentially you start dying. And I think it's very important as human beings, as leaders, as anybody really, for us to constantly be growing. But in order for us to do that, we need to be self-aware. We need to understand the baseline from which we come from. And if we're not self-aware, then can we really truly be constantly growing? Because we're not aware of what our limitations are right now, in the here and now. So I need to have a benchmark from which I can grow. So self-awareness comes in all sorts of forms, from doing psychometrics through to getting feedback from me people, 360-degree feedback. But I think also a lot of quiet time, really be understanding and aware of what you're doing in the moment and the impact that it's having on other people or other processes maybe. And that's a part of self-awareness. So I always say great leaders are the most self-aware leaders. And leadership is also about evolution. I am a totally different leader now to where I was 30 years ago when I first started my leadership journey. And, you know, I love this quote by Charles Darwin when he says, you know, it's not the strongest of the species that survives, nor the most intelligent. It's the one that is most able to adapt to change. And that's evolution, right? That's a definition of evolution. And if you think about the animals that have survived the longest, you know, animals like crocodiles who have been around here since the times of the dinosaurs, they've had to adapt to this evolving world. And survivability is about evolution. It's about adaptability. You look at some of these huge organizations that have gone to the wall when there's a financial crisis, you know, the likes of Blockbusters and Woolworths and so many others have gone to the wall, because they have not adapted to the changing circumstances. And I think agility and adaptability is critical. So I can't believe that we've come to the end of this episode already. I hope that you've enjoyed my ramblings. But leadership legacy, I think, is a critical part of our thinking as leaders. And we are leaving a legacy. Whether we understand it or not, whether we are conscious of it or not, we are doing it. So if we're going to do it, if we're going to leave a leadership legacy, then why not make sure that we leave the very best leadership legacy that we can do? And I think that's so very, very important. I hope you've enjoyed the episode. I look forward to seeing you soon. I will probably have a guest with me next time. But I'm going to do these little ramblings from Colmahay. And I hope that you've enjoyed this one. All the very best. Have a great day. See you very soon. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please do subscribe and click on notifications for new content. And of course, connect with me on LinkedIn. Take care. Have a great day.